Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. It's the end of the week for a lot of you, and the beginning of Labor Day weekend. A lot of people are taking a four-day weekend, and there's already been one horrible crash on Hypoluxo and 95 this morning. So please, please, please be careful. This morning, I want to talk about something that we've talked about many times, and that is all the violence on school buses. This week, actually it happened in July, but this week it's been on the news. So I researched it a little bit. It was in Pinellas County, and three 15-year-old boys whomped on a 13-year-old boy. I mean, pummeled him. And there was a video from the bus camera. No other kid offered to help and just took videos with their phones. The bus driver is seen standing up. You see the back of his head, and he's standing up saying, "Leave that boy alone, leave that boy alone. Y'all going to jail, y'all going to jail." But nothing stopped. And he calls for police backup, and the boys were arrested, and they went to court this week. You know, the 13-year-old boy was stuck between the seats on the floor, luckily probably protecting his head, but it was too late. He has two black eyes, and they broke his arm. But they were like one of the videos that I watched a while back that was all girls. They were like holding themselves up on the seats on the bus and just kicking this kid, like jumping on him. And of course, the three boys that perpetrated this were black, and the boy on the floor was white. So of course, we'll eventually, that's been mentioned, but nobody's picked up the ball to run with it. But you can bet that eventually that'll have some consequence, the fact that it was set up that way. But my question about all of this is, how do we instruct the school bus drivers, who are often retired older guys, older ladies, or moms that just want to work when their kids are in school, and take on the responsibility of driving, what does a school bus hold, 30 to 50 kids every day, pick them up at a bus stop, take them back to school, take their buses back, then in the afternoon go pick up their buses, go to the school, pick up the kids, and drop them off at the bus stops. I've been on school buses. I remember years ago I would go on field trips with my kids in upstate New York. And, of course, there were headphones there, but everybody didn't wear them the way they do today. That would be a blessing on a school bus. And if you'll notice, if you see a video of a school bus, a lot of the kids have got headphones on so they can't hear all the noise, because it can be nerve-wracking. The bus driver has to contend with that. Plus, keep an eye on the mirror so he can see what's going on the bus. But during the report that I listened to a couple days ago and then again yesterday, one of the reporters called the guidelines for a bus driver are ambiguous. Interesting word, ambiguous. I've never really totally understand what it means, other than nobody knows what it means. So I'm going to bring Shelley in so we can talk about this, because I have some more of this to share as well. Good morning, Miss Shelley. How are you?
Well, good morning, Rainey. I'm doing very well.
That's good. I hope you are too. Yep, yeah. I'm good.
By the way, the word ambiguous means that something can be interpreted multiple ways. It doesn't mean that it has no meaning. It just means that it can have more than one meaning, so that if one person reads the statement, it's the wording that's used in the particular statement is so nonspecific that it leaves it too much up to the interpretation of the person reading it. So that's
exactly what I mean. really knows what it means. I know what the definition is, but nobody really knows what it means, hence the word ambiguous. But the deal that I'm talking about here is the fact that there needs to be, and I've thought about this a lot, and you and I talked about it briefly yesterday, and there are some options that I think would be feasible. However, first I want to let everybody know, according to the video, now this is just how violent kids can get. Luckily, there were no knives, no guns, just fisticuffs and feet.
Right.
And we all know the story of the young girl who got pummeled in her head with Wayne Tracy in the combat boots. He's, by the way, in prison, but doing very well. He was valedictorian of his class in prison.
Wow.
Yeah. He's the young man, just so I remind everybody what I'm talking about, who found his only brother hanging from a tree dead. And nobody got him any help. They just let him deal with it his own way. And then he's starting a relationship with a young girl, and Josie, the girl that he attacked, got in the middle of it and said some very hurtful things to him in text messaging. And he lost it and went over and kicked her so bad that I was in the hospital seeing her and her mother about probably 5 days after the attack. And it was horrible what happened to her. And her life has changed forever as well. But two kids that things just got away from them, and there were no adults around to make sure that nothing terrible happened, so it did. So now we have three kids on a bus. They blackened both of this 13-year-old's eyes and broke his wrist bone in his arm. And you don't see him in the video. What you see is the back of the bus driver's head, and you see these three rather big boys. I don't know what size the 13-year-old is, but often boys sprout between 13 and 15, so my assumption, right or wrong, is that he was smaller than the three of them. And no other kids got involved. Nobody said stop it. The only one screaming stop was the bus driver. And there is the video camera on the bus. They established that a while back. But there needs to be something so that the bus driver doesn't fear for his life or his safety, and so that the kids know that they have to behave. A school bus, to be honest with you, right now is the perfect venue for things like this. Mind you, these boys got in trouble. They're going to do some jail time. They're going to do probation. One of them took a $5 bill out of the 13-year-old sock, so he got another charge, an additional charge. But the point is, it's not about how they take care of it after. It's how we do something to stop it before it happens. So I mentioned to Shelley yesterday that my husband had told me that he felt like, you know, there for a while we were seeing all those movies about hijackers on the planes, and that movie Air Force One, where they took over the airplane and everything. And my husband said, I always thought it would be feasible to have an airtight cabin. And if that was going on, the pilot could release a gas on the plane and sedate everybody, just put everybody to sleep and land the plane and have the police waiting, and the cabin would be safe so that the plane would land safely. I thought that was an awesome idea. Now, obviously, you can't do that because there's not an airtight cabin for the bus driver. But why hasn't a bus driver been given pepper spray? Not a very nice thing to do to a kid, but it's not deadly. It just kind of stops them in their tracks and puts you in charge again. I think mace is a little bit more dangerous. And, of course, obviously there's lawsuits and things like that that could be part of the end of a saga like that, because parents would be angry. But there needs to be something. There needs to be some way for a bus driver to feel in control of his bus with all those kids, because this, just since I've been on the show, this has happened probably a half a dozen times just here in Florida. Just here in Florida. So what do you think, Shel?
Rain, I'm going to leave myself on mute for a few minutes because I'm in a really loud area that I don't want it to be, have too much interference on the line. So give me about 5 minutes and then I'll unmute myself.
Okay. So here's the deal, folks. We need to think of some ideas. We need to, like, maybe get involved in the school boards, things like that. The safety of the bus driver has to be taken into consideration. The safety of the kids has to be taken into consideration. And there has to be repercussions. Right now, usually a kid gets a warning. If they talk, if they're out of their seat too much, they get suspended from the bus. But the only ones that they really do that to are the grade school kids, the ones that aren't trying to beat the hell out of each other now anyway. It's when they get to be teenagers and they're a little bit more intimidating that there's the real problem. So something, somehow, has to be done. There has to be a way to let the bus driver be back in charge. What do you all think of the idea of having another person on the bus? Maybe even a senior from the school be put in charge. Like, you know, used to have the patrol kids that would help cross the kids on the streets, and it gave kids a sense of responsibility. I thought that was a great idea and very healthy for the kids. You have monitors in elementary school classrooms of kids that are older. And I think right now there are some kind of bus monitors. I don't know what their job description is, but I remember hearing from one of the schools that there's a bus monitor. But it's probably just somebody who narcs on everybody else, which is not the answer. But there needs to be something, and there needs to be something initiated that stops the gang mentality. Because everyone that I've seen that's gotten out of hand is anywhere from 3 to 5 kids against one. And for whatever the reasons, if the one is a smaller child, apparently these boys went after this kid because he reported that one of the 3 older teenagers were trying to sell him weed. So he reported it to a teacher, and the boys got in trouble for that. And that's why this whole attack ensued on the school bus. Now, obviously, like I said, it's the perfect venue. It's the perfect venue for kids to know that they can get away with it, because there are nothing established that keeps the kids safe. First of all, just jumping around on the bus. Aren't we lucky that the 13-year-old's the only one that got hurt? Obviously, the bus driver stopped the bus because he was standing up and had his back turned to the driver's seat. But what if something happened and he turned around and looked and ran off the road? There could have been 30 to 50 kids being hurt that day because of an attack like this going on the school bus. And then the one that I watched with the girls, that one was almost more violent because these girls were actually, like, hanging on to the seats again and lifting up both legs like they were doing a squat and just pummeling down on this other girl. I can't understand, first of all, why after 3 incidents like this, other steps weren't taken. Obviously, the camera doesn't scare anybody. Obviously, the warnings about being suspended from the bus doesn't scare anybody. Not that I'm big on scaring people, but you do have to get people's attention so that they listen to what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. So my ideas are these. First of all, have a monitor, maybe even a retired or off-duty policeman. Maybe somebody who would like to volunteer for a little while to get some of these things under control. Maybe a volunteer parent. I know schools here in Florida struggle with money, public schools. I get all that. But, you know, what's worse, paying for a lawyer and a lawsuit or paying a few bucks a week to get somebody to sit on the school bus? And even that person has to have a means of control. Because it appears to me that if you are empty-handed and you're an adult, and even if you have a very domineering, very take-charge attitude, these kids, when they have a gang mentality going on, aren't afraid of you. So that may not stop them. Are you back, Shel?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. So, or they could give the bus driver, like I said, pepper spray or something along those lines. There's also things like stun guns and things like that that could be used that don't have any long-lasting after effects if it's really a serious attack. But waiting, stopping a school bus, say it's a country school bus, say you're way out 10 miles from school and something like this happens, by the time somebody gets there to help that bus driver and that kid, it could be too late. But something has to
be
done.
Well, see, the issue with the stun gun, because I was actually thinking that myself, is that, like you just said a moment ago, 9 times out of 10, these attacks are multiple. You know, there's multiple perpetrators. With a stun gun, you'd need multiple stun guns because it only fires once. You know, and once it's on that person, you know. Well, I'm talking about, like, the ones that had the leads come off them. I guess the problem with the stun gun is you have to get right up close to the person, or you're using the one that has the leads come off of it, but you can't stun more than one perpetrator with the one that has the little cables that come off of it. So the pepper spray is probably a better option because you can shoot multiple people with that. You know, you could get the kid. I think the best idea, though, is to have a buddy on the bus. You know, have the bus driver with another adult, with somebody else, so that sometimes if there's just two people in authority, in an authority type figure, that will dissuade a lot of this. And also, I think the kids have to be educated that any violence on the bus is a criminal offense, and I think there has to be stiffer consequences so that the kids aren't just facing, you know, being suspended from school for a day. I think they have to understand that these are criminal offenses. This isn't minor. This isn't kid stuff. And maybe the school board has to be a little bit more serious with the consequences when this type of violence happens, so that there's more of a deterrent. You know, you don't need a deterrent for people that follow the rules. You need a deterrent for the people that don't follow the rules, that don't care about things. So you have to make the consequences severe enough to get their attention. And right now, I don't think there are any consequences out there.
Well, like I said, these three boys went to court, and they're all going to do, they're all going to do some penance. And I wouldn't say that they are real stiff, but they are being punished for it. But again, part of that too, because of the mindset, is cool, which is scary to me, but truthful. So,
I know what you mean by that.
Yeah, so part of it is, you know, next time they tell somebody to keep their mouth shut, they're going to keep their mouth shut because they won. They got in trouble, but they still won this round. And that's
right.
What's scary for me. So unless we increase the repercussions from an attack like this, then it's going to keep on happening because this is how they establish their worth, these young people. And again, you know, through the past almost year now, we've talked about the protection of our young people and the violence that our that affects young people, and sometimes it's at the hands of another adult. And we've been really pro talking about helping the kids because that's really where my heart is. But I also don't want them all turning into a bunch of little banshees. I want them to be respectful and have respect for another person's life and another person's space. And so something has to occur. And the buses, like I said, is the most dangerous thing that we've got going on out there right now. The ability to be able to attack on a bus and have several minutes to do whatever it is you want to do and then fight it later. I mean, they don't think about repercussions. We know that anyway.
Right. I'm curious as to how they, one of the things I reacted to when you were telling this is how they found out that this kid is the one that said anything. I think it's pretty irresponsible on the teacher's part of the teacher, put that information out there that so-and-so reported you. I mean, I find that highly irresponsible because, you know, most people know that anybody that's dealing drugs would have a violent tendency to protect that. So that was one thing that kind of got my attention is when you said that the reason you were doing this was because you reported them. Well, how did they find out he reported them? Unless he said it himself, mm-hmm. which I doubt. You know.
Well, you know, that is interesting, trying to figure out how that did happen. And, again, so many of the things that we talk about are direct responsibility needs to be taken by the adults in charge. And, mm-hmm. you know, we say that a lot, but it kind of falls to deaf ears because, again, people are just doing their jobs. You hear that all the time. People are just doing what they think they're supposed to be doing, and, you know, you can't find fault in them. You can't, what would you do? You get all the feedback. But, again, it's our job, isn't it, to come up with circumstance? I mean, who were the first mm-hmm. parents so many years ago? And the first time their kid did something wrong, their first response to smack them, because that's just an instinct. You do something that you don't like, and then we went through the time where people had to learn how to control themselves. And, I mean, back in the day, kids got spanked at school. I don't know if you were of the age when you were a witness to. I remember a gym teacher who was the gym teacher and one of the deans or counselors or whatever we called them back then. But they had a paddle, like a ping pong paddle, mm-hmm. and you'd have to bend over with a chair. I don't remember any girls this happening to, but every boy I knew in sixth grade and in seventh grade would have to bend over this chair and get whacked on their ass 10, 15 times.
Wow.
And then kids were starting to get hurt. Yeah, kids were starting to get hurt because the teacher would get too overzealous, and then they put a stop to that. And that was considered corporal punishment, and you couldn't do that to a kid, and you had to keep your hands off of them. And then mm-hmm. they had some schools where you signed a paper at the beginning of the year that said, yes, if my kid behaves badly, yes, you can whoop his ass. And then that didn't work because then kids got hurt, and then parents were like, I didn't know you were going to beat the shit out of my kid, you know. So we've been through the gambit of all of this. It's not like this is new news. This is old news. But at the same time, there has to be an answer. There has to be an answer. And maybe it is incapacitating them for a few minutes so that you can gain control. And maybe when they wake up, they should be handcuffed. Maybe when they wake up, they should be immediately taken to spend the night in jail to give them a taste of it. I don't know.
Right.
I have mixed emotions about the why and wherefore of something happening.
Wouldn't
I have mixed emotions.
Interesting if when you're talking about young people, I don't know that this would necessarily work with adult criminals. Although it would be kind of a neat idea to just kind of, have out there, depending on how extreme the crime was. But wouldn't it be a neat idea to take these boys and make them go to the 13-year-old like house or something, and have to work off restitution for them? Because the problem with our criminal system is that the restitution never directly benefits the victim. You know, that's part of what's wrong. This is something that Izzy talks about, you know. Where in other cultures, the person that wronged you has to do something for you. They have to make some kind of restitution to you, not to the government, not to the council, not to the community. If somebody wronged you, they have to make restitution, you know, to you directly. So wouldn't it be a neat idea if it was a rule and if it was taught in schools, you know, you do somebody to somebody, well, guess what? Now you're going to have to go, you're going to have to paint their house, you're going to have to mow their lawn, you're going to have to carry his books for 2 weeks. So, you know, so here now you've done this thing that you bullied this kid, you beat him up, okay, and if you do something like that, now you're going to be his slave for 2 weeks to make restitution. I mean, I'm making it a little lighthearted, but I mean, there could be a way where they would have to be in service to this individual to make restitution, to do something. And in doing that, they might actually get to know their victim and not feel hostile to them anymore. You know, they'd have to sit in a room and talk and get to know each other, ask questions. You know, there could be a mediator there talking to both of them, kind of like what you used to do with people when they would not get along at Hippocrates. And you'd bring them in, and you'd make them talk to each other and find out a little bit. Or you would say, did you know that so-and-so does this, 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 and this, and, you know, their background is this, and then you'd do the same thing for the other. And by the time we'd walk out of the office, we'd have a much clearer understanding, a more respectful of understanding of what the other person's contribution was and how valuable they were to the, you know, to the company. The same thing could happen here if the victim and the perpetrators were brought together and actually put in a position of getting to know each other a little bit. It could actually dissuade further violence than just having these kids go to jail, not have anything to do with their victim, then get more angry in jail. By the time they come out, now they want to get more revenge. It perpetuates the violence.
Well, and I agree with that, 110%. I agree that doing back for the victim, first of all, is the punishment is great when you do that, because that's demeaning for a tough guy to have to kiss the butt of somebody that they've just mopped up the floor with. So, I think that would have long-lasting results, and I do think that if it's handled properly, like what you just said, then the repercussions later could have good results, could actually make friends out of these people and maybe give these 15-year-olds another opportunity to rethink who they're becoming and who they're going to turn into in a matter of time if they always use violence to make their point. I want to read this real quick because I kind of skimmed over. They didn't really get in very much trouble, which is another thing that bothers me a little bit. The three teenagers charged in a vicious school bus beating were sentenced to indefinite probation Thursday in a Florida juvenile court. The probation sentence for the trio of 15-year-olds came with multiple conditions, including community service, random drug tests, and electronic monitoring, meaning ankle bracelets for as long as 60 days. In addition, the teens must go take anger management classes, comply with mandatory curfews, and stay away from the victim. Joshua Redden, Julian McKnight, and Lloyd Kamraje had all pled guilty earlier Thursday to aggravated battery charges in the attack on a 13-year-old boy in Pinellas County school bus in July. Redden also pleaded guilty to a count of robbery for taking $5 from the victim after the assault. A Florida Circuit Judge, Raymond Gross, in delivering the sentence, ordered Redden to pay restitution of the $5 and also ordered him to do more community service than the other two. Prosecutors also asked for and were granted a measure stipulating that if any of the three students ended up at the same high school as the victim, they had the burden to leave that school and go to another one. Police had said the teens attacked the victim after he told officials at their dropout prevention school, so this is already a troublesome school, that one of them had tried to sell him marijuana. The victim suffered a broken arm and two black eyes after being repeatedly struck by punches and kicks. The attack was caught on video by a bus surveillance camera. And if these matters were in adult court, they would be considered very serious. So they should be considered more serious now, I'm sorry, but that whole
statement. Yeah, because you're developing the character of these kids.
Yes. The three teenagers are first-time offenders. Redden said he attacked the victim because he was angry and had been disrespected, but told Gross Thursday that he was sorry for the attack. Redden's mom, who was also in the courtroom, believed the video of the beating was shocking and appeared emotional, as she said it was the first time she'd seen it. Redden's lawyer says his client was accused of something that he didn't do. Prior to McKnight's court appearance, his father also said his son was sorry for taking part in the attack. All I can say is that he had his consequences already, you know. McKnight said, "This is life. I'm sorry what happened to the victim. It is. My son ain't never been no bad person. He just got mixed up with bad people. That's all. He's sorry." Okay. So,
wow.
Well, you know, I'm not going to comment too much on that because for me it's kind of like, you know, okay, well, that tells me volumes right there, and I'll just leave it at that. But I also want to know or want to share another fact, and that is what I was afraid of when I watched this earlier this week and what I knew would eventually happen, and that is the fact, of course, that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and all of our black race advocates are you know, either being ostracized because they're not saying enough, or are in the in the background just waiting to do something. Self-appointed civil rights leaders and celebrities remained mum on the vicious beating of the white sixth grader at the hands of three older African Americans in Florida, despite a growing chorus of critics who call their silence hypocrisy given their recent racially charged condemnation of the Sunshine State. Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who both blasted Florida in the wake of the Trayvon Martin shooting and the acquittal of George Zimmerman in Martin's death, with Jackson calling it an apartheid state and our Selma, have not spoken publicly of the brutal beating aboard a school bus caught on a cell phone and surveillance video. Neither Jackson nor Sharpton responded to requests to comment from Fox News. Three 15-year-old black teens beat up a 13-year-old white kid because he told officials they tried to sell him drugs. Former Congressman Alan West, an ex-Army colonel who is African America, wrote on his Facebook page, "Do you hear anything from Sharpton, Jackson, or NAACP, Stevie Wonder, Jay-Z, liberal media, or Hollywood? Cat got your tongues, or is it that pathetic hypocrisy revealing itself once again? Y'all just make me sick." Robert Zimmerman Jr., who ferociously defended his brother against charges the shooting of Martin was racially motivated, also chimed in, taking Sharpton and Jackson to task for staying silent on the beating. "It's time to unplug their mic, if you ask me." That's what Zimmerman's brother said. Apparently, racism only works one way. The attack took place on July 9th in the St. Petersburg area community of Gulfport, but the horrific cell phone and surveillance video came out only recently. Police say the three youths, all African-American, attacked the boy after he told officials at their dropout prevention school that one of them had tried to sell him marijuana. The unidentified boy was left with a broken arm and two black eyes. Joshua Redden, Julian McKnight, and Lloyd Kemraj, all 15 years old, were arrested a short time later. All three were charged with aggravated and have since been released. Redden is also charged with unarmed robbery. Gulfport Police Chief Robert Vincent told Fox News the attack does not appear to be racially motivated and was due to the younger boy reporting that one of the assailants had tried to sell him weed. West, who represented southeastern Florida in the House, denounced Jackson and Sharpton as race baiters and fake leaders during the Zimmerman trial for making the death of Martin into a racial issue. Do you really want to talk about the issues that are confronting the black community, or do you want to talk about the politically manufactured crisis that you have these, well, they're using the word faux leaders and those race baiters that are out there, you know, promoting it, West said in a July interview with Fox News. Reverend Manuel Sykes, president of the St. Petersburg chapter of the NAACP, told FoxNews.com, group is aware of the bus beating and monitoring it closely. We would want to see if any and all information out there has been determined if there's any disparities. All three of the assailants were expelled from school and are due back in court for a hearing early next week. You know, it's just like we've said so many times before. We're very, all of our big talkers are only willing to talk about things that get them noticed. Now, that's the truth. It's a simple truth, is the truth. If it's going to make them look like who they're saying they are, you know, for me, as long as there's somebody who's going to choose who there's advocates for as far as what color they are, we will have a problem forever. Because what should be happening here is somebody should be standing up and saying, you know, it doesn't matter what color these boys are. They shouldn't have done that. What they did is inexcusable. I'm sorry, it is. Just like the boys that hurt my grandson, inexcusable. And they tried to make that racial. And that was a joke. It's not supposed to be about race. It's supposed to be about people. It's not supposed to be what color you are. It's supposed to be what kind you are.
That's right.
And the whole thing is that there are so many crimes that are black on black, white on white, and they're the same crimes that go the other way. How many times has a white drug dealer beaten up a white person that reported them and a black on a black? I mean, it's not a race thing. It's these kids were selling pot, and they got pissed off at this kid. If he had been a black kid, they would have probably, because of their mindset, they would have beaten him up just as viciously. It wasn't a white-on-black thing. It was a drug-on-snitch thing. That's what this is about. So that
power.
Is what needs...
That's right. It's about power.
Right. So that's what needs to be addressed, not the black-and-white thing, because that's what's going to muddy the waters, and then they're not going to be dealing with the true problem here, which is getting kids not to do drugs and not sell drugs in school. That's the problem here, not black on white. And if they make it a black and white issue, then they're not going to be dealing with what the real problem at that school is.
Exactly. So what do we do about that? What do we say to people when it turns around and everybody thinks that, people wait for it, you know. My husband said this morning, well, how long is it going to be before Jesse and the boys jump on this, because I said they're not going to. And sad that I know that, but they won't, because they can't turn this around no matter how many times they spin it. It is what it is. So instead of looking at it as a race-motivated attack, they have to look at it for what it is. It's kids against kids. It's not black kids against white kids against black kids. Just like, you know, I mean, I talked a lot about the Zimmerman trial, and it broke my heart because I don't think either person that night intended for anything bad to happen. I know that that's true. One was minding his own business and doing his own thing, and the other one was doing what he thought he signed on to do, keep his neighborhood safe. And I think, like many things that you do for the very first time, they have a tendency to spiral out of control. And that's what happened that night. And it's sad. It's absolutely
sad.
Yes. But it was not motivated by color. If somebody's in the dark with a hoodie on and you can't see them, how the hell do you know what color they are?
That's
It's just not about that. And they have to start letting this go, because these men who profess to be peacemakers are making this 10 times worse every day that they open their mouths and say, you know, oh, my God, it's because our brothers are black, and oh, my God, it's this. And, you know, please pay attention to what's going on.
Well, you know, the sad thing about that, Rini, is that there still is discrimination. And when Cry Wolf, you know, the whole story about Cry Wolf, and then, you know, to get attention, and then when there really was a wolf there and nobody listened to him, you know? It's the same thing when Sharpton and all them constantly scream about bigotry and racism in situations where it's not, then when there really is an act that's deplorable and should be admonished, all right, nobody reacts, because these guys are they're too much in the media when it's not relevant or when it's not appropriate. So when it is appropriate, nobody listens to them, and it actually diminishes the reality when there is, because there really is true racism that's still out there today, and that's just as much of a crime as anything else. But because so much that really isn't racially motivated that's kind of lumped in there, it like waters it down. It doesn't have any impact anymore. People become desensitized and they don't care, because they just heard 10 stories that really aren't racism, and then when they hear a deplorable act that really is, they have no compassion for the people, because they've been desensitized by all the other nonsense that was lumped in there.
Well, and I agree with all of that. And I also believe in my heart that if we started working from the other side of this issue, then we would have better results, much, much better results. And that is getting us all to understand that in many cases it's about power. It's about who's going to be in charge, who's going to reign supreme, all that kind of stuff, no matter what level we're talking about, whether we're talking about workplace at the top of the ladder, whether we're talking about government, whether we're talking to world leaders. Everybody wants to be the head honcho. Let me tell you something. The head honcho has one hell of a big job. And the only time you'd really, really want to sit there is if you are the kind of that understands the only way you can sit in a seat like that is if the people that sit beside you are just as wise and just as responsible as you are. So it isn't about the most power. It's about who has the ability to get us all see eye to eye and work together. Then you're unstoppable.
That's right.
It will be interesting to see if there is any more repercussions in regard to the Jesse and Al Sharpton, and I can't even remember, there's another guy that's always involved, but if they get involved in, right now they're probably trying to get all their ducks in a row, so what they say is very profound and still makes their point, but doesn't sound like they're being bigots, which should be very difficult to do, because you are what you are. So I do think, though, that we need to come to some kind of a answer with the school buses, because it isn't one of the fights that we watched, it was like five black girls against another black girl. Then one of the other ones that we watched, it was one black girl against one white girl, and it was kind of a still a knockdown drag out because the other one didn't want to fight and the other girl did. So again, it's just it's really not motivated by race. And I'll tell you something else. I have a lot of teenagers here. They're more colorblind than any group of people that I've watched grow up in my 65 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, they get mad, and I'll hear them say, you know, something that I don't like, and I'll say, what are you talking about? Grandma, it's not the same. You know, if you're going to act like this, then you're this. And I'm like, okay, but they have a point. The problem being, of course, is that there's a specific word that I don't like, and they use that to describe somebody when they don't like them. Not when they're black. They say it when they don't like them, when they think they're acting badly and think they're hot stuff and get in your face all the time and do things like that. That's what they call them. And that person
right.
doesn't have to always be of color. So it's a different generation, and they have different ways of expressing themselves. But you go out there and look at the football field where my two teenagers play football every day, and they're like super close to these kids because it sounds like a pun, but they're on the same playing field. They all love
right.
football. They're all athletic. They're all having fun together. It's not about anything else but that. And when
That's
you
right.
look at when you look at our entertainment today and our sports today, that's what it's like there too. So why is it there's still so many of us that have such small minds? I don't understand how everybody can be accepting of it. I mean, remember the night that I talked about that adorable commercial with the little girl who asks Mommy if Cheerios are good for your heart?
Yes.
And Mommy says, yeah, it says here that it does this and lowers your cholesterol and everything, and she goes in and dumps the Cheerios on her dad's chest, and Dad is
mm-hmm.
black, and Mom, and the little girl is mixed, and she's just absolutely beautiful, adorable, and all the controversy over that. And I was like, oh, my good God. You know, what are you all thinking? So
I know.
We have a lot of growing to do, I guess, and a lot of prejudice to get over, but it's not ever really going to go away until people like these advocates for keeping the pot stirred quiet down and understand that things are changing. I mean, good Lord. What should have stopped them is voting in a black president. How much clearer can you be?
I know. Well, the bottom line is that, you know, there's so much emphasis, you know, on the black community, having a hand in drug dealing and things like that. But if you look at that community, there's just as many white people. There's just as many Asians. I mean, the drug community is a mixture, is a real melting pot. And again, it's not black or white or Mexican or whatever. It's drug dealing. And it pulls in everybody from every walk of life. You have people that were really making it that got sucked into that lifestyle. You have people that were dirt poor and got into that because they wanted a lavish lifestyle. You know, so it draws in people from every walk of life. And it's time that people look at that as something that tears down society, but take the ethnicity out of it. It's drug dealing. Whether it's a white, a black, or a Mexican, or an Asian, or who's ever doing it, it destroys the stability of a society. It destroys the stability of humans. You know, it tears them down. It makes them act in ways that they wouldn't if they weren't on drugs, you know. So that's a big issue. And people keep making it keep turning it on the racist dime again. And there's too many things that happen today that are wrong in themselves and has nothing to do with race. But, you know, so people just have, I mean, like, you know, like you were just saying, look at all the actors and actresses, look at all the sports figures. You know, these athletes are very, very disciplined. They take care of their bodies. They have a team mentality. You know,
that's
you
right.
Look at, you go to any hospital, you see there's black police officers, there's doctors, there's lawyers. It's like, so when are people going to stop being prejudiced? There are people of every color, every ethnicity, every religion, and every sexual orientation that are major, major contributors to this world being a better place. That's all that makes a difference. So to have any prejudice at all for any classification of person is like so mind-boggling, counterproductive, and inappropriate that I struggle on a day-to-day basis to understand why it is even still alive today.
Well, very sadly, I think it's the answer is very simple, and it's called anger and hatred, and sometimes people have to have, because of their own unhappiness for such a myriad of reasons, you know, they're who they are personally, what they have personally, what they don't have personally, who they came from personally. It's all about that, and it sometimes leaves them with an anger that they don't seem to be able to do anything with. And instead of understanding that it doesn't have anything to do with outside entities, instead of understanding that it has to do purely and simply with the man in the mirror, they want to lay the blame on someplace else. Anger in today's world is intense, very, very intense, and people are often looking for a place to let go of some of the pressure. And, I mean, the old saying, jump on the bandwagon, that's what that's about. You know, everybody's sitting in a place of discontent, and they see a big bandwagon leaving for another place and another reason to keep on keeping on, and they jump on it. And often that's motivated by hatred and anger so that they can get rid of all those pent-up emotions. There's a lot to be said for a lot of different things that are out there, and if you are one of those people who don't understand why you wake up every day feeling pissed off and aren't sure why, you need to get some help. You need to either meditate, yoga, tapping, long walks, change your diet. There's a million different things that you can do, but it's all about you. It's not about what the way your husband does or doesn't talk to you, the way your kids don't or do respect you. It has nothing to do with any of those things, although they are the salt and pepper in the stew that you're brewing. They are not the reason that the stew is brewing. So
right.
You are.
Right.
And learning that and coming to grips with that is not as easy as it is talking about it. I know that. I have all those same issues, and I deal with them on a daily basis. The only good thing about it is that I get it, and it's something that I talk to Rini about all the time. And that's what you need. You need to work it through for yourself, and it
mm-hmm.
shouldn't be anybody else. I would never think I could get rid of my frustrations by walking up to somebody and just starting trouble because I don't know what to do with all the anger in me. I would never do that. That's not who I am. But you see it being done every day, you know. So I think that there's a lot to be said over how we handle ourselves and who, you know, who we are and what we believe in. So it shouldn't be, though. You know, remember the story of my two blind friends. And as I said, they taught me more than any two people have ever taught me in my whole life about not being able to prejudge when you see what somebody looks like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, have to get to know the personality, the love, the feelings, the attitude of somebody before you see what they look like. That's why so many people years ago had pen pals, you know, because they made friends with many times somebody that they would have never made friends with if they'd seen them mm-hmm. first. So
right.
I think, I really believe that that Adam and Denise taught me so much about that, and let me understand that. Well, and then I went to see some of these new cartoons, and of course I loved Shrek, and I loved the fact that it was about an ogre who falls in love with a beautiful princess, but she's really an ogre, so it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Was awesome, right? And it teaches a 4 or 5 year old that it isn't about what you look like. You can still fall in love with each other. And then I went to see the foolish cartoon called Cars, and you fell in love with the cars.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
You fell in love with the personalities of the cars, right?
Yep.
Proof again that what you look like means not a damn thing.
That's right.
And there was certainly no discrepancy over the fact that Shrek was green, or that the Lightning McQueen was, I can't even remember what color he was, but they were all different colors, red and blue, and the old truck that was Larry the Cable Guy, or whatever his name is, who was an old rusty truck and everything. And Paul Newman, who was the old Cadillac or whatever he was, you fell in love with them. It didn't matter what color they were. And that seems maybe if you can't come to grips with the truth, but it is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we opened some lines of communication today about the buses. I do think it's a very, very, very serious issue. And I do think that we have to move forward with this. The school year is just beginning. I have 3 kids that ride the buses, and I think that we need to get a handle on what's going on the buses before somebody gets seriously hurt, or even worse, the whole bus load of kids and bus driver gets hurt. So,
right.
And another thing that kills me when I think about buses. Have you ever been on a city bus here in South Florida, Shel?
Like the Palm Tram?
Yeah.
I think once years ago. I don't really recall.
It's like being at a UN meeting.
I know what you mean.
There's good-looking people in 3-piece suits. There's moms with too many kids, who, coming or going. There's working people. There's black people. There's white people. There's yellow people. And everybody keeps to themselves except for people that see each other several times on the bus, because everybody tells me that, I met this guy on the bus, or I met this girl on the bus, and we started talking and everything. So it's like, it's like a community on the bus,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
they've found a way to accept each other's differences. Us, so why can't we get that same kind of respect on a school bus, except for the King of the Hill aspect? So, I think I'm going to try to compose a letter that will go out to some of the schools with some of our ideas. It'll probably get poo-pooed, but I'll try it anyway. I've been trying to reach the people at Deerfield Middle School to see if they would allow us to come talk about Izzy's idea.
Mm-hmm.
If it works. Still pursuing that. But for the rest of today, everybody, make it an absolutely awesome day. It is Friday, and it is Labor Day weekend, and I hope everybody has a wonderfully safe and happy holiday. I hope you spend time with people you love and that love you back. And that's what I intend to do. I'm saying goodbye to one of my grandchildren. She's 25 and has decided to move to Texas.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're having a going away party for her on Sunday. She will be missed. She's an awesome, adorable little redhead that kind of makes friends everywhere she goes. So I'm sure she'll have a ball in Texas, and hopefully she won't stay too long and come home. But everybody have a great day. Thank you, Shell. I will see you tomorrow morning, and have a great day, everybody. God bless. Bye-bye, Shell.
Bye, Reen. See you in the morning. Bye, everybody. Mm-hmm.